Hi, and welcome to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. 3 p.m. on Tuesday, taping in the backyard, Stevedore Shipping Container Studio at robertaspizza.com. Come check it out in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'd like to thank, right off the bat, Hearst Ranch for sponsoring the show. They're the nation's largest single supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable, native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result? Beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more info, go to HearstRanch.com. Today's episode, a little bit about familiar roots, about family, about coming from another land and reinterpreting the idea of your cuisine. I have Jacques Gauthier and his father, Maximilian, the show. Palo Santo is their restaurant. They actually own and live in the apartment that houses palosanto.us, the website, in Park Slope between 4th and 5th Avenues. What I found fascinating is right when Palo Santo opened, there was a lot of condominium construction and a smaller renaissance between the avenues of 4 and 5 in Park Slope. And nothing much was going on there other than these large erected buildings and people moving in. Well, Jacques took that as impetus to not only open up a restaurant, but to find inspiration and building material. What year did Palo Santo actually open up?
We opened up in 2006. It took me about a year and a half to get the construction done because I'm a real DIY guy.
It's true. Like DIY to a T, not to use all those acronyms. But if you go into this place, you see everything is completely handcrafted, right?
Yeah, the chairs, the tables, everything that we could do ourselves, we did it. And for the most part, the materials were salvaged. You were talking about the condo buildings that went in over on 4th Avenue. And before those condo buildings went in, they had to tear down the old warehouses and factories that were on 4th Avenue. And we just went over with wheelbarrows and hand trucks and went to town. It was like a shopping spree.
Yeah, Maximilian, you helped pick up some of this material with your son, yes?
Yes.
Yeah. Did anyone question you guys going down, to 4th Avenue, picking up a whole bunch of scraps with wheelbarrows about, what you were going to do with this?
Or? They were just looking at us, that's all.
Nobody really cared, and the demolition guys were happy to have it taken away because that was, some material that they didn't have to throw away.
Oh, yeah, free labor.
Yeah, the stuff goes into a landfill. They pay for these materials to be taken away and then pay for them to be thrown into a landfill. And these are usable materials.
Yeah. And so you guys built this restaurant on the ground floor of the apartment. But when did you actually move into the apartment in Park Slope?
I moved into the building a little while before the restaurant opened up. My lease was up. I was living over in Crown Heights, and my lease was up, so I had to move. And for a few months, I actually lived in a hammock that was
in paradise.
But you do what you got to do.
Yeah. And Maximilian, where were you living prior to
Palo Santo? I was living in Washington since 52 years. I'm living there then. Jacques is my favorite son, and I decided I would always wanted to live with him.
Yeah. Well, Maximilian also has a very inspiring and illustrious past. Originally being born in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, spending some time in Cuba, and then coming to Washington, D.C., but working in diplomacy for the majority of Latin America, would you say?
Yeah, I was working for the Organization of American States, which is a regional organization for United Nations. And there I was in charge of the French program through the Voice of America every Sunday, what's going on in America. And I was traveling also with the Commission of Human Rights, all Latin America, and I travel also sometimes with Jacques. That's where he went to many restaurants in Latin America to learn what they are doing. And his concept was to pick up what is the best on all those recipes.
Yeah.
And he stays, for example, in Uruguay, he stayed there working for a vineyard where the make the wine, you know. And then he
really learned. Is that Tanat, those kind of wines?
Yeah, my friend Pablo's winery, the Viñedo de los Vientos. I visited there, and actually I spent more time in Argentina working at a winery in Mendoza, at Viña El Cerno. Spent a whole summer there learning about wines.
Yeah. Yeah. And Maximilian, did you have a fascination with food too while traveling, or was that kind of spawned once Jacques started coming on the trips with you?
Yes. I was more interested than ever because I saw the way he was interested on the food. You know, yeah. When you want to go to the kitchen, how to cut the head of the chicken. And I said, oh my God. What? Because he was also an artist. He was painting. I never encouraged him to be an artist, because I know the artist is after the debt. They know if they were good or not.
So he became a chef, so he wouldn't have to be a starving artist.
Exactly.
So yeah. A well-fed one. But so you traveled all amongst Latin America, and what was interesting is that Jacques was saying before that a lot of people think of Palo Santo as a Latin bistro.
Asking
Latin
where
restaurant.
You get the name for Palo Santo.
Oh, yeah. Ask him. Where did you get the name for Palo Santo?
I thought of a few different names, and after a little while, I finally came up with one that hadn't been used, or I couldn't find a place that had been used. Palo Santo is a tree in that grows throughout Latin America. The wood is used for spiritual purposes as a natural, just burned, sort of like the Native Americans would in the Great Plains in the States burn sagewood, or sagebrush. Palo Santo is burned to clear the air and to cleanse the air, and so there's a lot of it's a wood, but it has a lot of spiritual properties to it, and. Also, it's kind of a play on words, too, because when you say Palo Santo is what's said before giving an offering to the saints, you know, para los santos, you know, say, but if you say it fast, it's Palo Santo. And being that Palo Santo was, that building was once, religious social club type of place where people had religious gatherings, I wanted to in some way kind of pay homage to that. In the name, and so it's the name that had a lot of meanings. I think any good name for a business or a band or a restaurant or something like that, it's got to have a lot of meanings on a lot of different levels.
Yeah. And with it encompassing all of Latin American cuisine and ideals, do people get mixed up on the concept that your restaurant being pan Latin is just kind of a muddied idea rather than just the best of the best from your travels?
Yeah, I've seen that sometimes. There's a bit of confusion with our concept. Our concept is it's been labeled Pan Latin when we got reviewed in the Times and in other places. I always called it Eclectic Latin. It's as difficult for me to put our style or the nationality of our cuisine into one word or into a compound word, as it's equally as difficult for me to put my own heritage into that word or a compound word like that. My mom's from the States, from Delaware. My dad, like you said, is from the Caribbean, and we have a lot of family spread out in a lot of different islands and a lot of different places. And so for me, the cuisine that we're cooking, the Pan-Latin cuisine, is less of an unnatural fusion and more of a genuine ethnic cuisine for us.
Yeah. And Maximilian, what is one of your favorite menu items at Palo Santo?
Oh, well, there is one dessert he make. He call it dessert tandoudoun. It was a dessert he tastes when he visit my aunt, And after that, well, I really like everything in Palo Santo.
As a father should.
And he's known for having a bit of a sweet tooth. And the dessert that he's talking about, it's coconut ice cream with toasted coconut on top. His aunt and his godmother, Tante Dune, she really loves to cook. She's a really great cook. And as a kid, when we would go down to Petronville, where she lives in Haiti, and visit, it really had a great impression on me seeing her cook. Like he said, like he talked about starting with the live chickens and the fresh ingredients and coconuts was one thing that she started with, these fresh dried coconuts. and I watched her break them open, shave them, peel them, and then shred them, and then toast them with a little bit of turbinado sugar in a pan. And that was something, as a kid, coconut, I knew coconut as, I liked cooking as a kid, but the ingredients that I could get at the grocery store, coconut was in a bag.
Yeah.
It was shredded.
It was brown and hairy and
the ones that would get in the store, it was just white coconut shredded in a bag.
Yeah.
We got like a Mounds bar or something like that. That's how I knew coconut. I had never seen, real coconuts, and I'd never seen them being used in that way.
Prior to, being on air, Jacques and I were talking about reinterpreting dishes and kind of moving ingredients into a local, sustainable nature. An example is the potato gratin. Jacques was saying, traditionally the potato or palm stuff involved, it's potatoes, cream, some spices. But a Latin American idea of that was reinterpreted using chayote, allspice, and coconut milk. What are some of the other, dishes that are based in one region that you've reinterpreted with Latin flair?
Well, it gets a little bit complicated here, because then now some of these dishes that might have been, for example, with the potato gratin, that might have been a traditional French dish that was reinterpreted with local ingredients in the Caribbean. Now we are reinterpreting that recipe again and making it with what we get at the green market. And so we might make that dish with a few different types of sweet potatoes that we got at the green market. I will say that we do use some Latin American ingredients that are imported, avocados and coconuts and plantains. But as much as possible, and probably about, that equals about half of the produce that we're using, it comes from the green market.
And this is perfect lead into, where does another large portion of your produce come from?
Oh, well, we do get some we grow a lot of our own vegetables too. Up on the rooftop, we've got a rooftop garden. And in the summertime, spring, summer, and fall, I guess three seasons out of the year, the majority of our salad greens are grown up there. We've got tomatoes, eggplants, and a number of other different vegetables that we grow up there.
But you're also growing a couple kind of more traditional Latin ingredients like papalo that aren't necessarily, impossible to find here, but are harder to source in the green market, etc.
Yeah, and to get them fresh, they're very difficult. So there are a few different Mexican ingredients, like papalo and tomatillos, where you can get tomatillos pretty they're readily available. But the tomatillos you're going to get in the store or from a distributor, they're going to be these larger, kind of bland green tomatillos. And the tomatillos we grow on the rooftop that we use for our rooftop salsa, they're actually purple. They're like purple or spotted, all different colors and different sizes. They're not like these uniform large green ones.
Now, Maximilian, what floor do you live on in the apartment?
The third floor, the top floor.
So you hear Jacques walking around when he's picking vegetables all the time?
Yeah.
Do you
then I go up there also looking at him.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing vista, too, if Jacques is nice enough to allow you to come and see the view. It, is on the top of this row house of brownstones in Park Slope, but, you see the East River, you see the skyline of New York, and it's quite majestic. It's quite a sight to see. Did you growing up have a garden, were you kind of traveling about so much that you saw, produce in its natural settings?
Well, yes.
So yeah, it was just this idea that you had to, create
His godmother, we talked about briefly, Tante Dun, she always had a vegetable garden, and one of the things that she would grow that I remember the most were the hot peppers. She would grow Scotch bonnet peppers, and they were so spicy. And as a kid coming from D.C., I had never had anything anywhere near as spicy as that. And the first time I had one of those, I was just, I didn't believe them when they told me that it was spicy and that I shouldn't eat it. And so I was, you know, a stubborn kid. I popped one in my mouth and I spent the rest of the afternoon crying in the bathroom trying to wash it out of my eyes.
Don't worry, if you go to Palo Santo, Jacques will play nice. We're gonna take a quick break and come back and talk a little bit more about Jacques' artistic past, about some more ingredients and meals that he's made out of his rooftop garden, and you know what's in the future for Palo Santo in general. Here's Michael Harlan Turkel. You're listening to The Food Scene on Heritage Radio. Back. This is The Food Scene on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Jacques and Maximilian Gauthier, chef owner and father of chef owner, palosanto.us, a restaurant in Park Slope serving pan-Latin food. And we were just talking a little bit about, you know, Maximilian's background growing up in, you know, Haiti, traveling to Cuba, doing diplomacy for most of Latin America, and Jacques, you know, traveling with his father and learning a lot about food and culture that way. But there are still some things that you can't necessarily get in New York. Jacques had just mentioned things like avocados, plantains. But Maximilian, what are some other ingredients or dishes you've had on your travels that, you know, you don't see here in the States and that you'd hope for Jacques to possibly introduce at the restaurant or try to grow on the roof?
Well, it's in Bolivia, in many other countries.
There are a lot of fruits, I know, that whenever I've traveled with you, things like the cherimoya.
Yes.
Cherimoya and special types of, you know, mangoes or papayas or things like that that are very difficult to find here.
So fine. Even this drink we call Flor de Jamaica.
Yeah, the Flor de Jamaica. You can get that dried, but you can't get it fresh.
Yeah, what exactly is it?
I have a plant growing now that I was finally able to grow from seed. It's outside. It's very similar to hibiscus, but the flowers are smaller and tighter. They don't have as beautiful blooms. They're smaller and tighter, but they're very flavorful. It's called sorrel.
I see in Crown Heights, you know, people sorrel,
exactly.
A deep red.
Not to be confused with English sorrel, which is a green leafy vegetable.
Yeah.
But this sorrel is a red flower that's used. And you know, he drinks that a lot. We make it from dried flowers. And who knows if this plant that I'm growing is able to flower maybe next year, we'll be making it with fresh ones.
That's awesome. Are there any other ingredients, fruits, vegetables that you're hoping to either source here that you've seen in your travels or aren't able, hoping to grow?
I don't even know where to start, you know. But unfortunately, most of them they just won't grow here. They won't. That's why we've had to reinterpret a lot of the recipes at Palo Santo with local ingredients. There are a lot of interesting ingredients that we can find locally that we use. This is one reason why we deal with the farmers market, and we deal specifically with actually a few different Latin American farmers who have local farms and sell their produce and meat and poultry and eggs and other things at the farmers market. For example, the Teos, Nestor and Alejandra Teo, they have a farm, Teo's Green Farm, up in Red Hook.
Which everyone pronounces as Telos, yes.
Telos, yeah. Yes. And so their farm up in Red Hook, they have mostly eggs. You know, they have laying hens. They'll bring us the laying hens, they'll kill the laying hens after they've passed, the point of... when they get older, they're less productive, and so we'll stew the laying hens. And one thing that's really interesting that they come with is they come with the unlaid eggs. So the unlaid eggs, along with the other organ meats, we use those. We like to make use of everything. You know, it's our philosophy is to use every part of the animal. And this is something that's really interesting that you would never find in an American supermarket. You'd never find this, in a Purdue chicken, the unlaid eggs. But it's something that's very common in Latin America to sell the laying hens with their unlaid eggs.
Excellent. And is that part of your anticuchos that you have on the menu?
We use the hearts and livers for the anticuchos when we make anticucho de gallina. But the unlaid eggs we actually throw into a stew or soup. We'll make caldo de gallina or some other type of stewed chicken dish, braised chicken dish, with the hens, and then throw the eggs in at the last minute, so they just kind of poach lightly.
See, it's amazing to see this creativity at work. Jacques just kind of go a stream of consciousness. And Maximilian, you mentioned that Jacques, was a very creative child, but also had arts in his blood.
Before I forget, as you ask Jacques about what he does with the rabbits he has on his garden?
Oh, we're gonna save those rabbits for last, because that's a special little one. But at first, I just wanted to kind of explore the idea of his arts background. You said that he worked in the arts, but what medium did he paint? Did he draw?
Oh, he paint a lot. You see. And what I like him, there is one painting I like a lot, the big painting he made. I have it in my apartment. I carry it every place I move. It's roots of a big tree in the Caribbean. And he has, to be short, he has on the top of the painting, he show you a lot of roots of the big tree. And he put the sign, you can forget.
You can forget your roots,
but the roots will never forget you.
Which I think rings true of not only the restaurant and the cuisine as well. Because when you walk into that restaurant too, the back, the dining room, there are similar kind of paintings and ideas there with the wood, with the natural structure of the bricks and just the inlay of the tables. How did you specifically do those tables too? Because they're quite a sight.
Oh, people are fascinated.
Yeah.
Well, the tables, there is a woman who came, you want to buy all the tables.
they're made with the wood that they're made with is all reclaimed wood. Most of them are made with old doors, and the doors kind of have a natural pocket in them when you lay them flat. And we filled those with different artifacts and things that mostly bits and pieces from the demolition, nails and other broken tiles and other things like that that we collected when we were doing the demolition to rebuild the restaurant. And then on top of all of those different odds and ends and bits and pieces, we put layers of polymer resin. It comes in two parts. You mix it together and it hardens, and it's like looks like glass.
Yeah, they're awesome. They're kind of like shadow boxes, but that you get to eat off of, which is a, you know, a reliquary of, you know, how Palo Santo came to be. Now we're going to touch on those lovely rabbits. I, unfortunately, was unavailable for Jacques' most recent, what I've heard, rave dinner, where he's been growing a couple rabbits on the rooftop. How many did you have?
You want everything to be fresh.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I started off with two, and then I had... six, and then I had eight, and
so it's true what they say about rabbits.
Yeah, it's true. It's stereotype, but it's true.
Yeah.
Now I'm back to four. A few years ago, I got into my head that I wanted to, I needed to have, you know, some reason why I was growing stuff on the rooftop and some, you know, ultimate goal. And so I wanted to create a series of meals made entirely of homegrown ingredients. And the first one held a few weeks ago, we had about 20 people. We fed 20 people. Garrett Oliver from the Brooklyn Brewery was there. He brought some beers that, you know, local beer made in Brooklyn, and Edible Brooklyn, you know, the editors and writers from Edible Brooklyn were present, and we made a 7-course meal entirely from homegrown ingredients. There were a few things, obviously, olive oil, salt,
yeah,
and maybe a little bit of breadcrumbs or something like that, but for the most part, it was all homegrown ingredients, all of the vegetables and all the protein. In this case, the protein were the rabbits were the only protein that we had. And so, you know, an interesting thing I should say, I had made a blog entry of like the week before this dinner, kind of explaining it and talking about it. And I actually was a vegetarian for a long time, and I went to a vegetarian cooking school. And some people might think of this as something a bit hypocritical for somebody who used to be a vegetarian. But for me, I really feel now what I'm doing is not on the complete opposite end of the culinary spectrum. I think that I've found some middle ground. We get our all of our pork, for example, we get from Heritage Foods. We get most of our fish from Sea to Table, which, you know, gets local fish, line caught fish from Montauk. And we're very conscious of the sourcing of our ingredients, and especially the proteins. So I haven't gone from being a vegetarian to, you know, a completely, you know, callous eater with a neglect for any type of morality when it comes to my eating. I've found some compromise by sourcing responsibly and sustainably produced ingredients. And by raising my own rabbits, I really tested my own ability to raise a rabbit humanely and to then slaughter and butcher that rabbit and then eat it. And I feel that the more people know about where their food comes from and the closer they are to the source of their food, the more respect they'll have for that food, and in turn, the more respect they'll have for the animals. When the animals are hidden far away from civilization and slaughtered in, you know, a dark, you know, hidden slaughterhouse, and nobody is present to see, to witness any, you know, cruelty or inhumanity that may take place, it's more likely to take place. When you watch what's going on and people work with transparency, then you're more likely to stop that.
What was the quote on the painting again? You can forget your roots, but your roots never forget you, I think rings true for this situation very much so. Are you ever hoping to grow other proteins on the roof? I mean, cattle seems like a far cry in Brownstone, yeah, Brooklyn.
If I had a larger roof, you know, maybe, you know, the next restaurant I have, maybe I'll look for a place with a larger roof.
Hydroponic
more,
fish?
Yeah, more air. Area. You know, I basically have the rooftop on Palo Santo is basically at its limit. We hope that next year we'll be able to maybe do two or three different meals made entirely of rooftop ingredients. This, of course, you know, it's not something that we offer to the general public, unfortunately. I can't put home grown, home raised rabbits on the menu. This is something that we did, you know, for special special dinners.
Maybe someday you can. Maybe this is a forum to start the bureaucracy going and opening up those doors.
It would be nice to be able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, so many people have the opportunity to be able to grow their own vegetables and, you know, be able to share that in restaurants. A lot of people have herb gardens, this, that, but I think you're onto something with growing your own protein.
Definitely the herbs, the vegetables, the salad greens, all of those things we grow and we use in the restaurant. Maybe eventually we'll be able to put the rabbits on the menu also, you know.
Excellent. Fantastic. If you've never been to Palo Santo, please do. Not just for its Pan-Latin experience, but for seeing where these roots come from foraging for materials, the actual foundation and structure of the place, to the ideas and inspiration that come from Jacques' travels, Maximilian's diplomacy, and, you know, be part of the family. Come there and enjoy. I hope you've been enjoying this show. It was kind of about the art of foraging, the art of family, the art of establishing yourself from your familiar roots. And hope you join us next Tuesday at 3 p.m. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Just want to thank our sponsor again, Hearst Ranch. Go to HearstRanch.com for more info. Our engineer, Jack Inslee, our producer, Jack Inslee, our engineer, Nat Wiener. Got to get that straight. They're the guys that control, how this radio station runs, operates, sound. But I hope you join us again Tuesday, 3 p.m. And, hey, stop by for a pizza. Roberto'sPizza.com. Not a bad place to spend an afternoon. Cheers.